Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Catapult the propaganda.
The military-industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And my name is Sharon Gilbert, everybody. Welcome to March the 11th. Sunday, March the 11th. That's 3/11/33.
Yeah, it certainly is. And we're in a new time zone in most parts of the United States.
We're living in the future.
That's right. If you haven't changed your clock and you're inside the U.S., except for certain parts of Indiana, Arizona, and Hawaii, it's an hour later than you think it is.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
Well.
One of our listeners sent me a note and quoted the Antichrist prophecy that he would change the times and seasons.
Yeah, yeah. In the United States, until this year, the first Sunday in April was the day that we changed our clocks ahead an hour for daylight savings time.
It used to be in May, but then again,
right.
That shows my age.
Now it's even earlier and I'm not sure what the benefit seems to be. They claim it's going to save energy, and I don't know what... I don't know. I guess we get to the end of the year, we'll find out if we've actually saved anything. We'll
I know
see
it's
if Al
light
Gore has
outside,
saved anything.
Well, that's the question. I don't think he could save it. And that man uses more electricity than a small town.
Yeah. Interesting that he won the Oscar for the Inconvenient Truth or whatever it was called.
Inconclusive. I don't know.
At the first ever totally green Academy Award ceremony, whatever that means.
Green with envy.
Yeah, and it turned out that a group in Tennessee discovered his energy usage is 20 times the national average for a home.
Mm-hmm.
So
even though he has a big house, it's way more than that house should pull. So
yeah.
He's not being very green.
No. Well, anyway, we digress.
We do. There's been so much going on. We've had Nazis in town. And
oh, yeah, boy.
That'll take your whole week.
Columbia, Missouri was the site of a Nazi march yesterday, Saturday the 10th. And this just sort of came out of nowhere at the beginning of the week. It became known around town that the National Socialist Movement, which is based in Minneapolis, was going to hold a march Saturday between noon and 5. Their mission was to protest the journalism school at the University of Missouri, which is it's the oldest J school in the United States, mm-hmm. one of the preeminent schools in the world. But the Nazis are convinced that they're turning out a bunch of Marxists. Now, I work with a bunch of J school graduates. As you would expect, here in Columbia, quite a few people who graduate the J school like the town and stay on in the media here. So I work with a bunch of them, and not a Marxist among them, as far as I can tell.
No, not a one. The funny thing is what we found out about the Nazis. Let me preface this by saying, 1 year ago, the neo Nazis marched in Toledo, Ohio.
Orlando a year ago was Toledo 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah,
you're right. In Toledo, it did not go well.
No. 4-hour riot.
It was a huge riot. And in fact, at the last minute, this actually has been laid at the blame has been laid at the feet of the police, which I think is really stretching and unfair.
Mm-hmm.
The police saw that a riot was about to break out, and so they revoked the permit,
mm-hmm.
and said, you may not march. Well, then everything just went crazy. Strangely enough, here in Columbia, when our local municipal leaders, great leaders of Columbia, and the police, were approached by this group out of Minnesota.
Yeah, that's their home base anyway.
Yeah, they gave them permission after a sort of talking it over amongst themselves, and they didn't tell anybody here in Columbia until just a few days before the Nazis arrived.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they had known for a couple of weeks, but didn't say anything to anybody.
Until this past week, right.
Right.
Yeah, we found out on Monday.
Yeah, and I wonder if the reason for that was to try to forestall any long-range planning that locals might, do, or frankly, there are groups that would come in and try to make a name for themselves who
right.
would protest against the Nazis on behalf of the local Colombians.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as it turned out, things were relatively peaceful. The police did have to have a couple of scuffles with people who counter-protested the march. 7 people were arrested here. Interestingly, only 2 of them were from Colombia. The other 5 were from out of state.
I'm telling you, they bus them in.
Yes.
In fact, I've said this to you. If I were going to start an organization like the neo-Nazis, you know, the neo-Gilberts, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call them,
yes.
And I decide that we're all going to go in and march into town and we're going to raise havoc, I would also start another group
mm-hmm.
that was against me.
The anti-neo-Gilberts.
Exactly. And
yeah.
have the, it's the old Hegelian dialectic.
That's right. And I think I tell a lie. It's four of the 5 that... We're from outside Columbia. We're from out of state. One of them was from Kirksville, which is northern Missouri. But mm-hmm. the point is, only 2 of them were Columbia residents, 2 of the people
still,
who were arrested.
Well, exactly.
And,
still
you know,
very
others,
few.
Right. And still very few arrested. And those who were primarily don't live here. They came in specifically to counter-protest the Nazis and cause trouble.
Well, their march was cut way short. I think it was supposed to last 4 hours. But
right.
in fact, it lasted far less than that. They left town because of disinterest here and went down to Jefferson City.
Right, to hand out pamphlets. Meanwhile, hundreds of people turned out at a local park, Douglas Park, named for Frederick Douglass, and basically had a great time. It was a beautiful day yesterday, mm-hmm. sunny in the 60s, and they had music. They had some carnival activities for mm-hmm. kids. They had barbecue and hot dogs and hamburgers.
You know, I applaud Columbia because the response overall was not in our town.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you can't march in our town. It means we're not going to give you the satisfaction
right.
that you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point was that people turned out, and they turned out by going to somewhere else.
Exactly.
And meeting and having a good time together. And you'll see the pictures of the Columbia Daily Tribune. And it was people of all walks of life that were out Douglas Park. So for the most part, we're happy that mm-hmm. things did not turn out the way the neo-Nazis would have hoped. So... we're glad to see that
kudos
episode
to the
passed.
People of Colombia.
Right. The irony of the whole thing is that when you read at the National Socialist Movement's website, the 25 points that they believe in, their political platform reads like something that a Marxist would write. You know, total government control over, you know, schools and businesses, and we're going to break up the big department stores, meaning Walmart probably,
mm-hmm.
and turn those over to, you know, small groups of people, and everybody's supposed to get a free education, and everybody's supposed to get a living wage from the government. It's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good point. How is socialism not left-wing?
Well, exactly. There's a fine line between Marxism and fascism, and I guess I always think of it as fascism is more like the Sauron approach to politics. One ring to rule them all. They don't know they're bound. They all think that they are free. And, oh, that sounds like the United States. Oh, excuse me.
Right. And then Saruman would represent sort of like the business leaders within
mm-hmm.
that fascist state.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sort of kind of profit from the whole thing. And that's basically the only difference between the socialist state of Nazi Germany and the socialist state of Joseph mm-hmm. Stalin. In Russia, the government owned it all. In Germany, the government... was sort of the corporate multinationals, IG Farben and you know those guys and the banksters
mm-hmm.
who essentially bankrolled Hitler and everything.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the word banksters because I think that should be one of the words that describes the theme of this show, and that is slavery. Whether
point.
We realize we're slaves or not. Which brings us to the film we watched today.
We don't often go to the movie theaters to see first-run movies.
No, the last time was years ago.
Well, yeah, the last one was
The Return of the King.
Yeah, the final movie in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But we have been intrigued by the movie 300, not just because of the historic element, which, of course, is fascinating, but the way the story was told. Stylistically... gorgeous movie.
Oh, it is. It's a pleasure to watch. It is. I love to sit down front. I
yep.
love to just feel part of the film, and mm-hmm. this was a great film to do that with.
It, just as a warning, if you're planning to see it, be aware that there's a couple of scenes that involve some nudity.
Mm-hmm. They flash by pretty quickly.
They flash by pretty quickly, and you know, tolerable.
Yeah, they are. They are. I'd rather they weren't in there, but...
Yeah, gore, decapitations, limbs being lopped off, but it's, you know, war at its bloodiest. Stylized. So, you know, as far as the artistry is concerned, excellent movie. Now, as far as the movie itself, and we'll tread carefully here so as not to, you know, give away too many spoilers. Of course, if you are familiar with the Battle of Thermopylae in history, 480 BC, it involves a character that we know from the Bible, Xerxes of Persia, who in the Bible is remembered as Ahasuerus in the Book of Esther. He's also referred to in the Book of Ezra and one other that escapes me at the moment, but he was in that period of time not long after Daniel, the prophet. He is basically was bent on conquering Greece. Greece was a major obstacle in his attempt to take over the world. And he ran into a stubborn band of 300 Spartan warriors and several hundred other allies, so the Phocians, the Thebans and the Thespians, which I thought was kind of funny.
I know. I just think it's hilarious.
But it's true. There was a town in you know, Thespia, and that's where these Thespians were. Anyway, and they confronted a much larger Persian army at a narrow pass along the coast called near the village of Thermopylae. And there they put on a heroic stand of a much greater magnitude even than the guys at the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. Was sort of like the Charge of the Light Brigade.
In a sense, yeah, these guys knew that they were going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And
we don't want to give away too much.
Right.
If you are familiar with the story of Thermopylae, then you do know the basics about it. The warning, though, it doesn't quite... It isn't an exact fit
with
what you find in the history book.
Very stylized, right.
Yeah.
The thing that caught our attention, of course, and I give credit to Sharon, because she sees these things much more clearly than I do, and picked up on the symbolism in the movie. Have no idea whether the filmmaker or the author of 300, Frank Miller, the director Zack Snyder, whether they had this imagery in mind when they created the movie or if it just fits.
Mm-hmm. It's that sinister force behind it.
Huh? That could well be.
Yeah.
The it's just interesting that this movie comes out at a time when we're told here in the United States that we need to confront another Persian threat in the form of President Ahmadinejad, the mullahs, and their imminent possession of nuclear weapons.
Very much so. And the release of this movie, when it was released on 3/9/39, is especially important because Ahmadinejad has said that the Mahdi, their version of the Messiah, will appear just about the time of March 21st, the vernal equinox. This is a really important time prophetically for all sorts of faiths, but it's not that far from now. 321 is not that far away. Now, we've seen in the news the last couple of days that 313, day after tomorrow, he says that their nuclear plant, Bashar, will be online.
Yep. So we're hitting at a very significant time, and... the symbolism in this movie, you know, I don't want to go into describing it because you really...
Well, I have a review on connecting the dots.
And I would direct people to that website, which is peeringintodarkness.com/CTD, and you'll find it right at the top there, along with some stills from the film, one of which has been manipulated a little.
Just a little.
I
think it was actually in there, though. I'm pretty sure that's the still from the film. You know, one really interesting, very creepy, but interesting side note to this is that I may have said this on PID radio before, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself. I'll just sit over here in the corner and rock. back in tickety two, a couple of years ago, I had a dream, a waking dream, that Derek was getting very amorous, but I knew he wasn't Derek. It was a frightening waking dream. In other words, it was like a vision. It was like it really happened. I would tell you. I told Derek. I said, I think it really happened because I was very much awake, and Derek was speaking to me, but it wasn't Derek. And I asked him his name. I said, you are not Derek. You tell me your name. And he told me his name was Ahasuerus.
Pretty creepy.
I know.
I slept through the whole thing.
He did?
Yeah. I don't remember. Of course, it is a very unique name, and it took me a while to remember where I'd heard it before. Of course, that's the Book of Esther.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not one that actually I woke up the next day and I couldn't even think of who he was. I just remembered the name.
I thought at first that was one of the names of demons that have come down to us through legend, not mm-hmm. necessarily through the Bible, like Asmodeus. You know, it's mm-hmm. not biblical, but it's traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little looking, and it was the king of Persia that Esther had to win over in order.
And that was about the time that Iran was starting to, you know, the drumbeats were starting against mm-hmm. Iran. So. We really feel, at least I really feel, that this whole business with Iran, Ahmadinejad, the connections to Persia, this movie coming out now, the vernal equinox, the prediction that the Persian Messiah is about to hit the world scene. We live in very interesting times.
Right, right. The thing that was really that really hit me like a cold slap in the movie was hearing the character Xerxes speaking lines that were clearly from the Old Testament.
Yes, yes. I didn't even go into that in my review. There's a scene where he tempts
Leonidas. Yeah,
and it's like almost like the Passion of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
For just a second, you feel, wait a minute. I'm on a different movie, and I also didn't bring this up in my review. Maybe I should go back and write some more. Nah, it's long enough. All of the Greek Spartans
mm-hmm.
speak with Scottish accents.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, the way they cast it.
I know, but I think it's intentional. Now, that's my own take on it, and I know you can say I'm wrong, but isn't it interesting that the Scots-Irish, that's the core of the Masonic branch of our government?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also the Scots-Irish, one could argue. In fact, Jim Webb, who's now Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, wrote a book about the Scots-Irish in the United States a couple of years ago, in which he argued that is the core ethnic, if you will, demographic that has comprised the real heart of our fighting forces here in the United States almost since the mm-hmm. time of the Revolution.
I would say that's true.
I mean, you're talking about the folks from Appalachia, you know, West Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, mm-hmm. who had traditionally been very patriotic, very, willing to go out and fight.
The great irony, and this takes us back to our very first topic, is the Scots-Irish, I think, are very white. So if you're mm-hmm. going to look at neo-Nazis marching into town, we tend to equate them with Germans, and I know that very much they identify with Germanic and sure. Aryan, but you know the typical WASP in the United States is
more like
Anglo-Saxon, Scottish.
Yeah, you're right. More likely Scots-Irish than German. Yeah. The guy that they chose to play Xerxes in the film was very tall, extremely tall.
I have a feeling that was, first of all, manipulated. I don't think that actor is really 10 or 11 feet tall.
But he's made to look in the film as though he's that tall.
Yes.
When he puts his hands on Xerxes' shoulders, his hands swallow.
Leonidas looks like a hobbit.
Next to Xerxes. We don't have any indication historically that Xerxes was that big, but in the movie he's portrayed that way. Very interesting. He mm-hmm. also is referred to as King of Kings and Lord of Lords.
Mm-hmm.
He's referred to as the Lord of Hosts.
Mm-hmm.
He begins the temptation of Leonidas by saying, mm-hmm. come, let us reason together.
Exactly.
Which is what God says, you know, through the prophet Isaiah at one point. So some very interesting lines that were employed in this film and depictions. And as Sharon mentioned, there are some hybrids that show up in the camp of the Persians, like the goat-headed thing. I was like, is that a guy wearing a goat's head, or is that really a goat-headed guy?
It looked like a goat-headed guy to me.
It really did look that way to me. And they also had a couple of other, you know.
There are other hybrid
cave troll.
There were so many things in this that were like homages to the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah.
Including the moment that Leonidas frankly looked like a troll. I mean, like a hobbit.
Yeah.
He looked so short. But there are, you know, the oliphants that are in the trilogy, mm-hmm. the Tolkien trilogy, the elephants. There's one rhino that comes in, and I just had to laugh thinking of Republican in name only.
Yes. So do read Sharon's review of the 300 in at peeringintodarkness.com/CTD, connecting the dots, and see what you think. We'd be interested in you picking up that thread and commenting on it at the forum, which is peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
Oh, you can also, if you're registered at CTD, you can also comment right there.
That's true.
Don't think I took comments off this. Every once in a while I take them off simply because it's something that really is up there, not for commentary, but just information. Go see it.
Yeah.
But if it got us out into the theater, and trust me, I'm not a big theater goer, it's worth going.
Yeah. Speaking of rhinos, just a little political news here that we found interesting today. Don't know how this is going to play out, but it's being reported that former Senator Fred Thompson, who's also made a fine career for himself as an actor, is considering a run as the Republican nominee for president.
I say go. I mean, can you imagine, if you're familiar with Fred Thompson at all, you have to be sitting there going, I can picture that.
Yes.
I can see him sitting down with Vladimir Putin and just, you know, Putin just wilting.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody who's got some gravitas in the chair and who's going to say what he thinks instead of parsing his words.
As you say, he is not a Republican in name only.
Yes.
I think he's an old camp Republican.
That's where we come to rhinos, yes. Mitt Romney, rhino. Giuliani, rhino.
Oh,
John McCain,
Giuliani,
rhino.
Demo row. I don't know. He's more Democrat than
right.
Republican.
So we found that kind of interesting. Now, of course, the this is still just early on. He's not formed an exploratory committee or anything like that. And if he were to do so, I'm sure that the slings and arrows would appear shortly thereafter, and we'd start learning things about Fred Thompson in the past that we don't know right now. But don't think of Thompson as an actor. You go back and do a little digging into his history. He was like co-minority counsel during the Watergate hearings, who apparently came up with the line, which was a question, which was asked by someone else, one of the members of the committee. Co-chief counsel.
Yes.
What did the president know, and when did he know it? Thompson was the guy who prompted, I think it was Howard Baker, to ask that question. So he's been around a while. He got his start as an attorney. He was a former U.S. attorney, and he has been involved with politics for a while. Of course, he served 9 years as senator from Tennessee. He filled out Al Gore's unexpired term when Gore was nominated, became vice president of the United States. So, compared to the other Republicans who are running right now, with the exception of Tom Tancredo or Ron Paul, I'd have to say I'm more excited about Fred Thompson running for president than anybody else.
I agree with you, and I haven't been excited about anybody running for president in a long time.
Yeah.
Well, we mentioned earlier, at least I did, that the theme of tonight would be slavery. And by that I mean the notion of returning to the old serfdom ways. Whether you know it or not, you are a serf.
That appears to be the direction that this country is going. It appears to be the direction of most of Western society. Parts of the world never got out of that. But we were just thinking about this over the weekend and doing a little reading on the nature of credit in the United States, how available it is, to whom it's being offered, and how many of us really own anything. We've been raised to believe that we need to buy a home so that we can, you know, build wealth. We can have hard, tangible asset. And if you own your home free and clear, then God bless you. You've done it right. But the fact is that most of us don't own our homes. And those of us who do are constantly being tempted and bombarded with messages that we should draw out the equity in our homes for, you know, paying off the consumer debt that we've accumulated, the unsecured debt, or to take, you know, advantage of that equity and do the things that we've always dreamed of doing. Don't leave your equity sitting there in your home. The fact is that the savings rate for United States citizens now is a negative number. We're spending more than we earn. We don't own our homes. We don't own, you know, we're making payments on our cars. The average American household's got something like $9,000 in credit card debt. And again, we're not saving anything. We're drawing off of our savings in order to maintain our lifestyles. Mm-hmm. Where is all that money going?
Well, that's a really good question. I would add to that, not only do we not really own our homes, very few own their homes outright.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the home may be in your name. You may be responsible for insurance and maintenance and for payments.
Yep.
But ultimately, the bank owns your home until that day that you pay off that last dollar.
Right.
And the bank can demand that last dollar anytime the bank wants, whether that's in the fine print in your mortgage contract. Most Americans do not own their cars.
Mm-hmm.
It has become the fashion to trade up.
Mm-hmm.
So you take on a new car and a new payment. You just get used to making the payments. So you have a relatively new car all the time. And sadly, automakers have, American automakers, and maybe other cars too, but for the most part, it used to be if you bought a car, you knew it was going to last for your lifetime if it needed to. Look at all of the old 1930s, 1940s, 1950s cars that still run.
Mm-hmm.
My dad restored cars, and I drove a lot of old cars, and they drove just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine that same 1999 or 2007 car trying to last that long.
Yeah. We're familiar with the phrase planned obsolescence.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is, I think, because our economy has become dependent on Americans trading up. The world's economy depends on Americans continuing to consume.
Because America is the biggest consumer in the world.
Yeah. Now, again, I ask, where's all that money going? Who holds the hard assets, the banks that have loaned us the money for our homes and for our cars, but especially for our homes?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very interested to see numbers on how many Americans really do own their homes free and clear. And I'm not talking about just having equity in your home. We had equity in our home until the market flopped last year. Most Americans have some equity in their homes, but the fact is that that's only good to you if somebody's there with it, mm-hmm, ready to write out a check.
It's money on paper.
It's money on paper. It's not a hard, tangible asset in your hand. And if the bank calls the note, how many of us have the assets or would have the assets available to pay off the note?
And the fact is, if there were an economic crisis here in the United States, banks in danger of folding might, mm-hmm, suddenly call in all their notes.
Yeah, because they'd have to pay off whoever they owe.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me, and maybe I'm being an alarmist here, but it seems to me that the majority of the real wealth in this country, the land, the hard assets, are in the hands of those who've loaned the money to us down here in the bottom of the food chain to buy those assets. And if we fold, and we're seeing a record number of foreclosures, and foreclosures increasing anyway, I don't know about record number, foreclosures increasing, bankruptcies increasing, who winds up then with the hard assets at the end of those legal proceedings? The big banks, the banksters. Mm-hmm. Where does that leave us then?
And I would argue that it's big fish, little fish. The smaller banks that fold will be gobbled up by the bigger banks.
Sure.
So you're going to have fewer and fewer banks.
Sure. Oh, and we've seen that over the last 15 or 20 years. Anyone who's had a checking account for more than a couple of years has seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, just in the time that we were in St. Louis, we saw Mercantile Bank bought up by...
There was one bank on the corner that we banked with for 2 years, and in that 2 years' time, it traded four times.
Yeah. It started with a little local bank, and then it was Southside National, and then it was bought out by...
somebody else. And
whoever. Yeah, it's the Farmers and Mechanics or somebody.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, yeah. It was in the hands of somebody in another state. And that seems to be the way that most of the banks are going. So is it just me, or, am I just looking at this with open eyes now? Does it seem that there is a flow of capital, of real wealth, from the bottom of the pyramid to those at the top?
Oh, definitely, and I think it's been going on for a long time, and I know our listeners agree with this, or at least most of them, I think, do. I do see what appears to be an intentional plan to bankrupt America.
It sounds crazy, but...
It used to sound crazy to me, but not anymore.
Yeah, but when you consider that we've seen over the last 18 months, well, the last year anyway, the housing market in the United States hitting the skids. In our neighborhood, homes that were going for 180 were dropped about 135.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you still see television ads for 125% loan to value mortgages.
And
why in the world would anyone want
to? And their interest only payments.
Yes, which means you never build any equity.
Exactly. Folks, if that's the kind of deal people are getting, you are better off to rent.
Yeah.
Because essentially what you're doing is renting from the bank.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can argue that, oh, yeah, well, I'm getting a tax break. Well, okay.
Does that really offset the fact that you have to pay taxes on your home and upkeep your home
exactly.
and pay insurance on your home?
Mm-hmm. Probably not. I'll tell you what, and again, this isn't for everybody. I mean, it helps that we don't have small children or dogs at the moment, but there's really no benefit to us in taking on a house with a lot of outside property to maintain.
Okay, a little parenthetic here.
Yes.
For those who heard the dog comments,
oh,
if you
yes.
didn't see the update to last week's PID radio comment, that post I updated, we no longer have a dog.
Yeah, Sammy was, he went for me a couple of times.
Yeah,
for no
he went for
reason.
Me.
Yeah, without provocation.
Yeah, totally without provocation.
Yeah,
all we did was move.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even touch him.
Yeah.
We just moved and he suddenly, we really think that Sammy, bless his heart, 99% of the time, wonderful dog. But sadly, something happened in his puppyhood somewhere that took a little part of his brain, and when you least expect it, he just goes for, you know, for blood.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't take correcting well.
No, he didn't. Now, our dogs did, but then we raised them from puppies, so they knew mm-hmm. when we corrected, they'd better listen.
Yeah, so sadly, he was the product of a bad upbringing. And that.
And it wasn't the fault of the gal we got him from.
Oh, no,
you know, she was fostering.
She got
him.
He had been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, we were sad to lose the bunker Buster dog, but we'll just do without one.
But yeah, but so anyway, in here in our rented bunker, we're perfectly happy and perfectly happy not having to do any exterior maintenance or yard work or anything.
Well, that
like
is
that.
The truth.
Now that might be a different case if Nicole was still small and we would want a yard for her to play in.
But you know, even that you can rent.
You can.
It would have been tougher where we were living before. St. Louis County rents are far more expensive than here.
And it's a lot more. Yeah, it's a lot harder to find rental property there than it
yeah.
is in a college town.
Mm-hmm.
Here, there's just rental units all over the place.
Oh, there really are. In fact, we're scouting out a new place for the bunker.
Yes.
So if you live in central Missouri and you know of a good property out in the country that's for rent, let us know.
Yeah, that would be cool. Something with a good field of fire. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. A couple of items in the news that were of interest. And we're going to keep looking into this economic thing because it just... Yeah, again, I've got a degree in econ, but it was strictly theory. It was not really in any practical application. But it just seems like the things that we see don't make any sense at all. I mean, the bombardment with offers for credit cards, the offers to take out loans that are worth more than your home, doesn't make any sense unless there is a... unless the business model of the big banks at the top is to just offer so much credit out there at such a cheap rate that everybody goes into debt.
I know.
And apparently, and that's obviously what's happening. Again, America's savings rate is a negative number.
Well, we are totally inverted here, and I'll just end with this on this topic, and that is that, as I said earlier, we have become a consumer nation,
yes.
not a producer nation.
Right.
We hardly produce anything anymore. In fact, the car companies that are here are either taking their stuff elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
moving their plants to Mexico or to China or to India, or they're just shutting down,
mm-hmm.
selling out. Daimler Chrysler is going back to Daimler because Daimler wants to get rid of Chrysler.
Yeah.
They may even have to get somebody to, please, we'll pay you. Take the company.
Yeah.
China is making more cars than the United States.
That was a shocking statistic. Over the last 10 years ago, China only made 6% as many cars as the United States. Okay, 6%, the number of cars is the U.S. Last year, China made 5.2 million cars.
Mm-hmm.
The United States made 4.4 million cars. In less than 10 years, China went from fewer than 10% the number to making more than the United States.
In fact, I would go so far as to say, and I've said this to you privately, I think it is only because of intentional masking really can't think of the word I want right now, but China, for all intents and purposes, should be the world leader. They are producing the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do consume, but they are producing the most. They are militarily very strong.
Mm-hmm.
They have a huge army. And in fact, I have read the very number, 200 million, with regard to their military prowess.
Yep.
And that's a number, of course, that we find in prophecy.
Right, exactly.
And yet the United States remains as the apparent head of the free world.
Mm-hmm. The only real advantage that we still maintain is a technological advantage, and yet that is a gap that's very quickly narrowing.
Yeah, so why is the United States, it's almost as if the rest of the world just looks at the United States and says, okay, well, we'll pretend you're still the boss.
Mm-hmm.
In the meanwhile, we'll have our meetings, and you won't be invited,
yeah.
Which is exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And so you get, oh, it's almost like the Spartans. Oh, silly me. Small group of people, warrior nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, you know, if we want to go into a sci-fi direction, it's sort of like the Peacekeepers in Farscape. And that's a kind of an obscure reference, so we won't go there.
That's more like the UN.
So, what else is going on? Well, the FBI this week admitted that they abused the Patriot Act, and we don't mean to say we told you so, but we told you so. The national security letters were issued willy-nilly with no congressional oversight, no judicial oversight, and this gets back to the whole freedom isn't free thing. We're told that we should sit back and allow the government to have access to our personal stuff without a warrant, because it's not whether or not we have a reason to search through your stuff, it's whether or not the search is reasonable.
You know, this feels like a shell game to me. This feels like, look over here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look what the FBI is doing. Evil FBI. Don't look at the NSC.
Right, because while that's...
The NSC, NSA.
One of those NSs. NSA, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Because while that's going on, the government is testing a new data mining program called ADVISE, which stands for Analysis, Dissemination, Visualization, Insight, and Semantic Enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they developed that to fit the acronym, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
When you read the article about this, it looks just like the Total Information Awareness Program that was supposedly shut down in 2003 when Congress defunded it. In reality, what happened was they just moved it to a black budget operation and continued, you know, the NSA TIA program. This is, you know, again, another data mining program, which is one of many, actually. In reading this article from Gannett News, I was surprised to learn that 52 different federal agencies currently use data mining programs, data mining technology. There are 199 different data mining programs in use, according to the General Accounting Office.
Well, I think pretty soon the job's going to be so much easier for them. Over in the UK, in the year 2009, I think it is, that is the deadline for everybody to voluntarily switch over to the biometric IDs. If you want to travel outside the UK.
Okay.
They say it's voluntary. However, if you do not volunteer and get the new biometric ID, you don't get to travel outside of the UK.
Well, you know, that's like the same kind of argument as the, there's some discussion on the forum right now about this new backscatter X-ray technology,
mm-hmm.
which is being tested down in Phoenix. You basically step into a booth and they scan right through your clothes and you stand there in front of a transportation department screener, essentially naked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, we fuzzed the picture so they don't get any fine details. The problem is when they do that, it doesn't pick up plastics on your, like, you know, plastic explosives or, you know, box cutters or whatever.
It's meant to make us feel
right.
Like traveling.
But the argument, again, is, you know, well, flying is voluntary, so, you know, freedom isn't free.
Mm-hmm. Well, it serves two purposes. Like I just said, it keeps people flying,
mm-hmm.
which the airlines have to have. The airlines are almost ready to bankrupt anyway. Second of all, it slowly gets us used to invasion of privacy.
Right. And while I agree that when you fly, you want to make sure that the person next to you hasn't smuggled an explosive onto the plane, and so maybe, you know, the backscatter X-ray isn't the best argument against government intrusiveness, it is one more example of, you know, getting used to this, indoctrinated to this this atmosphere that we have in the country now that we have to allow the government into our personal dealings, communications, and if need be, when we travel, you know, to look underneath our clothing to make sure that we're safe. This is how we keep you free, mm-hmm. by making sure that we can, you know, search through your stuff without bothering with this, you know, antiquated Fourth Amendment, you know, warrant stuff.
You know, that reminds me, we've talked before about the NAFTA superhighway.
Yeah.
That wants to bisect our nation.
Mm-hmm.
B-U-Y.
Yeah, bisect. Good one. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Zachary Sintra, the company mm-hmm. that is footing the bill for all of that, the part that, what is it they call it, the private partnership, the
public-private partnership.
Oh,
security,
SPP.
Security and Prosperity Partnership.
Yes,
yeah,
the SPP.
SPP.
Mm-hmm. Because the companies that may actually own part of the infrastructure here in Missouri as well. Sintra also asked for, and I think received, rights to airspace above that large swath of land for a 1,000 feet up in the air.
Really?
Now, why would they want that? Well, you and I were talking about this the other day. We started thinking, airspace, what can you fly at 1,000 feet? Oh, yeah, drones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with little monitor drones. Make sure mm-hmm. that you're paying your toll on the tollway. This does raise some interesting questions. And it's one that's going to impact us here in Missouri, too, because Zachary, Sintra's partner in the Trans-Texas Corridor, approached the state of Missouri with an unsolicited proposal to build a new bridge, a toll bridge, across the Mississippi River at St. Louis. This is a project that Missouri and Illinois have been trying to agree upon for 10 years. Suddenly, Zachary, with a new division, Zachary Infrastructure International, or International
mm-hmm.
Infrastructure.
Zachary's just the domestic partner of Sintra.
Exactly. You know, H.B. Zachary's been around a long time, Texas-based heavy constructor, power plants, refineries, roads, bridges, things like that. They approached with this proposal where they would construct the bridge and they would own the rights to collect tolls for people who cross. Now, Illinois is not crazy about it because most of the people who use the bridge are Illinoisans who come into St. Louis to work and then go home again.
And the toll has been pitched at $8 per car.
Yes. So it wouldn't be cheap. And Illinois doesn't like the idea that they'd be on the hook for almost $500 million worth of connecting roads to tie into Interstate 70 or 64 or whatever. But the question is, what kind of enforcement powers does the government cede to a public-private partnership like Zachary or like Sintra on this Trans-Texas Corridor? If you blow through a toll gate or refuse to pay your bill, because it's possible that they would, rather than putting a toll gate up, they would just put a scanner, and in order to get on the bridge in the first place, you'd have to have a an RFID tag
mm-hmm.
Hanging from your rearview mirror or something. What happens if you don't pay? Can they revoke your license? Can they suspend your license? What can they do? So it's kind of interesting to consider implications like that.
I think that's a really good question. And if you're on that highway, sorry to interrupt, no. Are you on Spanish soil?
That's a good question. Don't know. I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't think so either, but, you know, I don't know. Missouri used to belong to Spain.
Yeah, now maybe this is the way of trying to get it back. The Indiana Toll Road, the Chicago Skyway, these are examples of existing roads that were built with tax money, built with taxpayer money,
mm-hmm.
which have been turned over on long-term leases to Sintra and Macquarie and Zachary. This is something that we're going to see more and more in the United States and around the world. There are huge conferences that are being planned in the UK, here in the US. In fact, our director of MoDOT, Missouri Department of Transportation here, Pete Ron, is a featured speaker at one of these PPP conferences coming up.
PPP or SPP?
Public-private partnership.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the PPP concept fits into the SPP.
I know, it's all part of the same thing.
But what it boils down to is the wholesale sell-off of public infrastructure bought and paid for with public tax money
mm-hmm.
to private companies, private corporations.
Exactly. There's a huge for-sale sign over the United States. I mean, we're going bankrupt, so all of our assets are in the hands of banksters, international bankers.
Mm-hmm.
And if that isn't enough, the infrastructure that we paid for with taxes and our own tolls isn't going to belong to the United States anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're leasing it out.
And it's being sold to us as a great thing. Hey, look, if we sell off, or if we rent, lease out the Indiana Toll Road or whatever to this company for 99 years, they will give us an upfront payment of, you know, fill in the blank, you know, $13 billion or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We can take that money and do good things for the people and won't cost you a dime.
Well, what happened to all of the lottery money that was supposed to go toward education and infrastructure?
Well, isn't that interesting? Now, I'm going to have to check this out, and I'll post a link in the show notes. But one of the states is talking about selling off the lottery to a private investor. I think it might be Illinois. So I'll have to look that up. But that is another example of another publicly funded asset that could well be turned over to private infrastructure. And this gets back to the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is the agreement that was signed by President Bush, former Presidents Martin and Fox,
mm-hmm.
to essentially begin the process of merging the three nations through harmonization of trade and environmental regulations without having to bother with taking these treaties, which is really what they are, before the United States Senate as required in the United States Constitution. The NAFTA agreement already provides for tribunals that supersede United States court.
Mm-hmm.
If a Canadian or Mexican firm feels it was wronged by an American corporation, they can file a lawsuit in an American court. If they don't get the justice they want, they mm-hmm. can take it to the NAFTA tribunal, where a NAFTA tribunal's ruling will supersede even a ruling of the United States Supreme Court.
You know, way back when, back in the old days, when I was studying as a youth, as a young lady in a church in southern Indiana, I was studying prophecy, and we were taught that the Antichrist would come in and be the leader of the world, new world order, whatever you want to call it, one world government. And at that time, I pictured this as something that would just suddenly emerge. No.
Nope.
It will appear to suddenly emerge. It's the overnight sensation actor who's been quietly appearing in small roles for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
The one world government is already here. It's just not advertised.
Right. And we in America, as Sharon said, are already on the road to serfdom if we're not there already. And we just don't recognize the door to the cage is about shut.
We don't even notice the cage is there because we're so happy. And I'll put myself in this boat, too. There are times that I think I get distracted by what's on television or what I'm doing this week or what I have to, you know, what I'm going to wear. There's so many little details and bread and circus moments that, mm-hmm. that keep us distracted.
Sure.
That make the cage seem kind of nice. Hey, I've got a nice house around me. It may not be ours. We rent it, but, you know, it's a comfortable place, and we mm-hmm. eat well, and I eat too well. And
yeah.
There are donuts aplenty.
Donuts aplenty. Got my beer for the weekend, and Cubs are on TV pretty soon. Yeah, exactly. We get distracted by those things, and we think, hey, life is good, and we don't realize that the freedom that our forefathers fought and died for
mm-hmm.
Has been usurped bit by bit, boiling the frog by degrees.
Yeah.
By the way, Indiana is the state that is planning to sell off its that wants to sell off its state lottery. Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana appears to be really on this kick of just taking public assets and finding private investors to either buy them or lease them for one-time lump sum payments.
This started out years ago in Indianapolis with oh, gosh, what was the mayor's name at the time? But he was selling off or leasing out government departments to private companies.
Hmm.
And, gosh, I can just see his face. I'll come up with it here in a minute. I really think that at the time that everybody was lauding him, saying, wow, this is the greatest deal. Suddenly our tax burden is lower
mm-hmm.
and it's more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from that point, we have gotten to this, where it's not just a local businessman who's taken over the trash collection or whatever. It is now an international company.
Right.
And in this case, the King of Spain.
And what's really interesting is that one of the companies that has been closely tied to the Bilderberg Group for many, many years, the investment bankers, Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys in Goldman Sachs move on and are, I mean, what, the last three chairmen of the, or secretaries of the Treasury come from Goldman Sachs, Senator John Corzine, or Governor John Corzine of New Jersey now is was a former CEO of Goldman Sachs. Whenever you look at the list of attendees at Bilderberg, there are at least two or three Goldman Sachs representatives there. Goldman Sachs is apparently looking at this public-private partnership concept as a windfall. They've got a division that advises states on how to cash in, take advantage of mm-hmm. the PPP concept. Hey, here's how you can package up your highways, bridges, toll, you know, whatever, and attract private investment into your state that can be used for, you know, whatever, you know, schools or economic development or whatever. Well, on the other side of the coin, they're actually investing in these things. Okay?
There's nothing illegal about it. It's shady,
yeah,
but it's not illegal.
Exactly. So they're on the one hand, they're drumming up business, and then on the other hand, they're you know, investing in it, and obviously Goldman Sachs didn't get to be the company that it is by making bad investments. So, yeah, there are some ethical questions to be asked about that, but that's what is taking place. Again, it's rather complex to explain. It's not the kind of thing you can put on the TV news and explain in a 30-second story, and there are no you know, pretty blondes that you can attach to the story. So it is not likely to break through the you know, the editorial policy of the main news or the local news editors that you know, that feed the stuff that you watch on television every night. You might see Lou Dobbs doing some stories on this as we go forward. You might see some things pop up about this in you know, a few internet publications like Human Events Online.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this is not something you're going to see talked about very often, and you certainly aren't going to hear any politicians talking about this in the run-up to the presidential election.
Boy, that's the truth. Richard Lugar is the name I was searching
Dick
for.
Dick Lugar.
Dick Lugar.
Huh. Interesting.
Yep. He started back in Indianapolis. Oh, yeah. Again, so did
Oh, and another example of privatization and how things can go wrong. Here in Missouri, the janitorial staffs in state buildings used to be hired by the state and employed by the state.
Mm-hmm.
We privatized that, started hiring out cleaning companies to do it, you know, which was a cost savings and everything, until it was announced this past week that we discovered that they were hiring illegals. And so, in fact,
what a surprise!
Yeah, our governor, Matt Blunt, was just on the big story or whatever, the John Gibson show on Fox News Channel, talking about this. They had to fire these guys and prosecute because they were hiring undocumented workers.
Well, so we're almost out of time, but we do want to remind you of the big story of the week is, of course, down in South America, where President Leonidas Bush is making his tour of the various countries, promoting happiness and freedom, and essentially, apparently, leaving evil in the ground because the Maya priests have to come along and cleanse it.
Yeah, in Guatemala, Mayan priests are going to purify a sacred archaeological site after the president visits. A spokesperson for the group said that a person like Bush, with the persecution of our migrant brothers in the United States, with the wars he has provoked, is going to walk in our sacred lands is an offense for the Mayan people and their culture. So a Mayan NGO, non-government organization, is planning to chant and burn incense and herbs and candles after the president's appearance at one of their sites in Guatemala to cleanse it of the evil spirits that he's bringing with him. I wonder, now, as he travels further south, I know that he was in Uruguay. Was he going to visit Paraguay, where he supposedly bought like 90,000 acres of land or something?
I think that's a really good question, because, of course, that's what we have talked about before on PID Radio, the fact that his daughter went down there. Was it both of them?
Two daughters.
Yeah, they went down there very possibly to take a look at the land that he is supposed to have bought.
Sign the paperwork. Yeah, that was on the Guarani Aquifer, which is one of the largest aquifers, freshwater mm-hmm. aquifers in the world, and very close to land owned by Reverend Sun Myung Moon.
And let us remind you, if we have not said it often enough on this show, let us say it again. oil may seem really important,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes down to it, it's water.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't have food without water. You can't live without water.
Yep.
You can live without oil.
There will come a day when oil will no longer be the coin of the realm, and mm-hmm. water will be. And there are powerful elites who are making moves to secure their claim for future generations to healthy supply of fresh water.
And Sun Yat Moon has lots of it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Speaking of oil, by the way, something to keep an eye on, just watch for stories in the news about American military, especially Navy, presence in Southeast Asia, Thailand, Gulf of Thailand. Apparently there are blocks of being divvied up to multinational oil companies for exploration, and so there will be some pretty intense competition there to see who gets to investigate and dig, drill for oil in the Gulf of Thailand.
Of course, keep an eye on what happens in the Persian Gulf
mm-hmm.
this week. It's hard to say what's going to happen. I hope nothing. I just pray nothing happens.
Yeah.
But the truth is, as I said earlier, we live in very interesting times. And, of course, that's an old Chinese curse.
Right.
But we consider it a blessing.
Yeah. And we will keep our eyes out. Yeah, because if we take President Ahmadinejad and the Iranians at their word, the month of March could be very, very interesting. Much more interesting than we would like. But meanwhile, we're always open to hearing from you, your thoughts, your observations, things that we missed. You can always address us at email at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can join us at the forum. It's peeringintodarkness.com/forum. And don't forget about Beth Bay's new radio show. It's premiering.
Ancient Future. It was the first one was this past Friday night.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that.
Yep, you can download it. I've got a copy, in fact, already downloaded to my laptop here.
I am way behind. Yeah. I'm way behind. I keep working on stuff.
Dr. Mike Heiser will be your guest next week.
Excellent.
Her guest, yes.
Definitely have to listen to that. Also, always check out LauraMansfield.com and HomelandSecurityUS.com. These are a couple of sites that keep an eye on what is happening in the world of jihad.
Mm-hmm. Yep, excellent resources. As always, we thank you for this hour. We look forward to talking to you again next week. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return. And at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.
Catherine Adamson thought she was going back to her quiet hometown of Eden, Indiana, to settle the affairs of her late Aunt Celeste. Instead, she discovers that Eden has literally gone to hell. Two high school students have disappeared, leaving behind only a running car and a bloody shoe. Strange lights have appeared over the town, and the fields of a local farm are marked with blackened circles. Eden County Hospital reports record births, incredibly large babies joining the ranks of a growing number of giants. Many of Eden's leading citizens have been hiding evil secrets, but their behavior has been closely watched by the mysterious Dr. Apollo Bell, head of the Mount Hermon Institute. All of Eden is a war camp, and citizens must choose sides in an eternal battle. Catherine is reunited with her old flame, Joshua Carpenter, the publisher of the Eden Chronicle. They quickly learn their strongest ally may be John Thundercloud, a legless old Winnebago Indian who spends his days writing line after line in a library full of tattered diaries. It's Winds of Evil by Sharon K. Gilbert, book one of the Laodicea Chronicles. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.